Well, hello everyone. Here we are once again. Another episode of Seeking What They Sought. And today we have a new friend with us, Kevin. We're so glad you're here.
So glad to be here, my friends. I know we've been talking about getting on the pod for a while, so I'm glad it finally happened.
This one's been a long time coming, and I'm so glad it's happening. We're so glad. Jesse and Eric are not with us today.
They ditched us. we can say whatever we want about them.
They have no power.
That's our tradition. When someone isn't able to make it, even if it's for legitimate reasons, they deserve to be...
Just a slight roast. Hey,
just a little roast.
Just a little
bit.
Slightly.
Since I don't know any of them, I'm gonna rely on your expertise and your insight about
sure,
both
absolutely.
Of them. So,
well, speaking of roasts, Kevin, you're into tea, and that has nothing to do with coffee. So that's a horrible segue. But I thought that I would at least attempt.
That's not even.
Well, technically, I mean, you're not too far off because you could roast the spices.
Okay, here we go. Here we go. Save it for me, okay?
It's not too far of a jump, no.
The cardamom can be roasted before. Well, I just guessed with cardamom. I didn't even know if you even roast cardamom.
Okay,
no,
so
could.
This is...
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, so this is totally unrelated. Actually, we'll get into this because you have a nickname... Anthony, you put this down, the CEO of Chai. Have you actually been called that, Kevin, the CEO of Chai?
Yeah, you know, there was a time in...
What's
in,
the origin story?
I'll give you the origin story.
And, yeah, of the name.
Fair warning, it's going to be very underwhelming. And so during the time when TikTok was blowing up, I would say this is like 2020, around that time, people were... kind of self-describing themselves as CEO of whatever. And so there was a CEO of barbecue, a CEO of SaaS, and people were just doing that kind of as a trend. Mm-hmm. And they put that stuff in their bio. And I didn't start off with making Chai videos. I don't know if you know that, but I just got on TikTok, and we can get into this later on. But some of my youth were telling me, hey, Pastor, you should get on TikTok. And I started with... at the time, I didn't want to get into TikTok at all. It was just I was just experimenting with this new app that just came on the scene, and I downloaded it, got it on my phone, and I started browsing, which I wanted to just browse for 5 minutes, but 5 minutes ended up becoming 3 hours, and I'm just like, what am I doing with my life right now? This is insane.
It's like a black hole.
And I started making devotional content just to experiment with the app, but then one day I started to make. I decided to just document my chai making process and put it on TikTok, and that thing blew up. Honestly, just blew up like crazy within a couple of days. Couple of 100,000 views, and it was around that time where people were making the CEO thing, and I said, "Okay, fine, CEO of Chai. Let's just put it there. Let's just make CEO of Chai." And it stuck, man. It's just stuck, and people started to call me and CEO of Chai and all this, and it just became a thing, and I just stuck with it, and so. That's the short origin story.
Yeah. Nice. So, and we'll get into a little bit of the background there a bit more, but I actually had a question. So again, this has nothing to do with our topic. So we're going to do your hot take. This is not going to be it could be its own. We've done a series called Bad Explanations where we talk about things from our faith, you know, whether it's Ellen White or alcohol or something else where we feel like the church doesn't always explain it very well. And we grew up with a very boxed in mindset of it. Yeah. And okay. Tea and coffee, right? Ellen White talks about tea and coffee. What's your hot take on the way she talks about that? Is coffee and tea evil? Are they of the devil?
Now, just so you know, Kevin, this is going to be our YouTube title. So
this is actually
going to
be
say
the clip
next.
That we post on social media. So whatever you say, it's going to be totally out of context. So good luck. You've
good
got 10
luck.
Seconds for the reel.
Oh, man.
You can answer this seriously or
that's
satirically.
The thing. You know, I have to confess, I wish I've talked to like with a guy someone like Matthew Lucio or someone to actually get like the raw theological material to back up my answer for this. But unfortunately, I don't have it. So this is just shooting from my hip. I don't think they're evil, but they could be evil in the sense that if they distract you from following God, if they distract you from seeking the Holy Spirit, if they become an idol, and anything can be an idol, then they become evil. You know, it's just straight up. I think in the same way that anything can become an idol, and any good thing been taken in excess. And so in that sense, it could be, but I don't personally think it is for myself because I know who I am and my limits. And I also think that, you know, you got to contextually understand, you know, like how was coffee used during that time? What was the function of tea? And unfortunately, I don't have that information to back it up. I would have to rely on those guys to tell me, about that. But so, yeah, I personally don't think they're evil. It's just, again, it's use. Are they idolatrous to you? Do you now depend on them as a way to kind of cope with the stuff that life throws at us? Do you go to that? Do you go to God? I mean, you know, it's a very subjective thing. So,
Well, in that sense, go ahead.
I do have to say this, though, that if you have to pick one of the two when it comes to something that's like that's going to cause you to be less codependent on the thing, tea objectively is a good choice because black tea contains like less than 0.25% of caffeine. It's like 1/4 the amount of caffeine that a cup of coffee in the same size would have. So you are less likely to be addicted to it, less likely to have jitters with black tea more than coffee. So in that sense, tea is kind of better in that sense. But again, it depends on how much tea you consume and how much coffee you consume. So
Cool. Well, now we've done our episode on bad explanations for tea. So we've got our answer.
We'll see you guys next time.
We'll see you. Thanks for listening. Go ahead, Anthony.
Yeah, well, Kevin, we just want to, we're so glad to have you on, man. We've been kind of bantered a little bit, but would you just maybe share with us, who are you? Tell us a little bit about your faith journey, how you grew up, and then your connection to Adventism.
Yeah, so Kevin Wilson, born in Sri Lanka, lived there till I was 12 years old, then moved to the Middle East in a country called Oman. So lived my high school years in Oman, in a predominantly Muslim country. I was born Adventist, but my parents were not. My dad was a Catholic, but not really practicing too much. And my mom was Hindu. Religion.
You just said you were born Adventist, but your parents were not.
They weren't born Adventist. He's a first generation.
Oh, I misunderstood that. Okay.
Right. Yeah. Sorry about that. Yeah. So they were not born Adventist. So that would that make me first generation Adventist? I don't know. Is that the
The official term is barely Adventist, but it's nice. Something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
No. So that's interesting. Catholic and now, did they get married when they were both part of those separate religions, each other?
No. So they both. Both of them got sponsored by missionaries who were working in Sri Lanka during that time in the 50s, or actually in the 60s. And so they were sponsored by two different people, and they both met at the only Adventist college in Sri Lanka. So once they came to the college, my dad became an Adventist in college, but my mom had become Adventist when she was 12 years old, when she was asked to be the translator of this evangelist who had come to her village in Sri Lanka. And so she had no idea about Christianity or Adventism, but she translated for this guy, because she was very proficient at Sinhala, Tamil, and English at a very young age.
Okay.
So these are the languages spoken in Sri Lanka. And so after the end of the evangelistic series, she went back to her mom, my grandmother, and she said, "Yeah, I think Adventism makes sense. I'm going to be Adventist."
Wow.
Which was kind of a big deal, because she was the middle child of 11 kids, and a lot of people none of her siblings thought that she was serious. And so, but from the time she was 12 years old, she was Adventist. So, but they came together from two different locations into Lakpahana, which is the Adventist seminary the college there. And so, and they got baptized, so they became Adventists there.
Okay.
That's wild, man.
Do you find and we'll continue with your story after that, like as you grew up, but do you find that having parents that were fresh into Adventism when you look at other people's experiences, hearing other people's stories about their upbringing in Adventism, do you think that that changed maybe the way that you grew up looking at the church or the beliefs versus maybe others that had, you know, grandparents, great grandparents, and beyond for mm-hmm. those within the church?
100%, man. Even though I was born as an Adventist, from the time I was a little kid until I was 18, the people that I interacted with, out of all the people that I interacted with, the minority was Adventists, because even my most of my mom's side of the family, they were still Hindu. Most of my dad's side of the family was still Catholic. So and when you grow up in Sri Lanka, it's a very communal experience. So, you know, I grew up with my aunts and my uncles all in the house. And at a given time, we would have like at least 10 people in the house all raising us. And so I had to be sensitized to the fact that I had to kind of defend my faith. Like, I kind of need to explain myself to other people that, like, this is why I'm Adventist. And so at an early age, I had this kind of consciousness of us being different, of us being distinct. And so it made me appreciate the particularities of Adventism at even a young age for me, man. And so by the time I came to Andrews when I was 18, when I was 19, that was my first experience at like a majority Adventist space.
Yeah.
I remember looking at people around. I'm like, wait, you're Adventist. That's crazy.
Wow.
And so
that was new for you.
That was new for me. Yeah. Even in Oman, in the Middle East, the church, especially in places like that, becomes a safe zone. And so outside of my church environment, my high school experience, my sports experience, my recreational experience, all of them were non-Adventist. Even in the school that I went to, myself and my sister were the only Adventist in a school of like 800 kids.
Wow.
And so, I grew up Adventist, but being very sensitized to the fact that I am like one of... I'm like one of the very few people who are like me, who think like me and act like me. And so that definitely shapes how I saw people who are, you know, fourth, fifth generation Adventist.
Right.
I remember being in class, you know, doing theology at Andrews, and sitting next to guys who were who had like Adventist grandparents and great grandparents, and just like.
That was foreign to you.
Yeah, just that was foreign to me. That was absolutely foreign to me. And so I would ask them questions about different things because I was so fascinated by the Adventist culture. But I also remember being underwhelmed by some of the answers because some of them, you know, they just like grew up like thinking like this is all their reality, you know?
Yeah.
Nice. And so they didn't have the context that I had of being other. So that was really interesting.
Wow, man. So as you know, you know, we asked you on to chat a little bit about media and like how the church interacts with media. And I guess we're curious about like your experience with media growing up. Did you, like a lot of us who grew up in the West, we watched like VeggieTales and, you know, there's all these like staples of media that most Christian kids have seen. And if you're Adventist, like, you know, you've seen, you know, a lot of it's like Adventures in Odyssey or Your Story Hour or VeggieTales or like stuff like that. What was your experience with media growing up in church? Doesn't have to be like Christian media, but just media in general.
Yeah. So one of the things that people are usually surprised by, or were surprised by when I first came to the States was how much I knew about American media, because they were like, wait, did you know about this artist and that artist? So like, I had like a pretty good understanding, and I could have conversations with most people about pop culture and trending topics because of how pervasive American media is and still is to this day. Even growing up in Sri Lanka and Oman, the moment where something comes up, like a new hit or a new single in the billboards, we got it in Oman. We got it in Sri Lanka. Not necessarily the record itself, but like, you know, we got the video, we saw it, and everybody was now copying the latest trend. There was this whole period where like baggy clothes were like so in.
Right.
And so, yep. And so, yeah, I remember watching like You Got Served and like Drumline.
Nice.
And like that You Got Served was like a canon event in my life.
Wow.
And so people don't realize that, like, you know, as a Sri Lankan kid growing up in Oman, like You Got Served was a canon event for all of us in our class.
Wow. Because,
and then we started to like, you know, wear our jerseys and like sag our pants and this and that. Because we thought it was like super cool. And it was like, wow, that's awesome.
Wow.
So when it comes to media, American media in general, like we got all those things. But when it came to Christian media, it was different. Mm. Like I didn't grow up with VeggieTales. I saw my first VeggieTale episode when I came to Andrews and people were talking about VeggieTales. And I was like, what is VeggieTales? I have no idea what that is. But during Sabbaths growing up, my parents had a record, a VHS tape of Hanna-Barbera's Bible Stories.
Classic. Yes. Classic.
Yep.
Classic, you know? And so we would watch the same thing over and over again every week.
That's the one with those friends, right? Like Moki?
Yeah, Moki. Yeah.
The ones that like slipped through the sand and then went to the ancient temple and found it.
Adventures in the Bible.
Have you, Kevin, have you heard of Bible Man? You know what Bible Man is?
I do. Now I know who Bible Man is.
Okay, yeah.
I was like,
with the lightsaber?
Like, that's peak Christian media right there is Bible Man. That's the best.
Yeah, I had no idea about Bible Man. When I first heard about Bible Man, I thought it was like satire. Like I thought it was a joke.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I was like, wait, this is actually serious? People actually watch this and like they were nourished by this? Like, oh my goodness. So I didn't grow up with that.
Nourished is a strong word.
Yeah, nourished is generous. Is
a very strong word.
It is a strong word.
Wow.
Yeah. No, so I didn't grow up with any of that stuff. And so in terms of other media, I grew up every Sabbath. It was the Hanna-Barbera. But then when we had lunch together as a family, we would always watch PMC and Pastor Dwight.
Wow.
So 3ABN was our only window into Adventism. 3ABN Hope Channel. Into Adventism outside of Oman and Sri Lanka. Well, we didn't have too much. We didn't have a satellite in Sri Lanka, so all our television, the satellite networks were in the Middle East during my high school years. So 3ABN Hope Channel, and I remember, man, as a kid, a 11-year-old kid growing up in the Middle East. Mm-hmm. I remember watching Pastor Dwight and PMC and thinking to myself, "Hey, one day it'll be really cool for me to go to America." And also meet Pastor Dwight and like shake his hand and tell him like how much of an impact that he had in my life. As a 10-year-old kid, you know, I looked up to him more than anybody else. And it was kind of like my bucket list to actually go to Andrews, take a picture next to the globe, and take a picture with my dad at Pioneer Memorial Church. And because that was my only window into Adventism, man. Outside of this, and I was just like, "Whoa! One day I can do that. One day I can meet this guy." Little did I know that, you know, after all these years, we end up working together. And like he knows me, and like it's been crazy, bro. So
yeah,
wow,
yeah, that's pretty cool. And that's the thing is that window into Adventist media. You brought up 3ABN and Hope. Did you have any experiences with Amazing Facts, or that wasn't on the radar at that point?
Amazing. We did know about Pastor Doug. Doug Batchelor was a big fixture in Oman. He has a great. Even from during that time, like he had like a massive pull.
Sure.
In the immigrant population and the expat population.
Yeah.
In the Middle East, because all the Adventists in Oman, they're not like natives. They're not, you know, Muslims. These are people who would come from other parts of the world to find employment in the Middle East, in the Gulf region of the Middle East, in Oman. So we had Bangladeshis, Filipinos, Indians, Pakistanis, a lot of Africans, from Kenya, from Zimbabwe, from South Africa. And they all gravitated towards Amazing Facts and Bachelor. My parents did too. And but for me as a kid, I didn't resonate with Doug Bachelor much, but like I watch like old David Asherick. I don't know if you remember.
Oh,
that.
Wow.
Old school David Asherick with his Revelation seminars.
Yeah, yeah.
Like I ate that stuff up, man.
Wow.
Yeah. So that was my experience with that sort of thing.
Yeah. And I brought that up because so we did a part one already. And Anthony, I don't know if you mentioned this at the start, but so this is part two of our Adventist media series. And we talked with Matthew Lucio, a friend for all of us, honestly, that we, we just talked about the history of the church when it came to literature and radio and TV and how we were kind of at the forefront of all of those things. Like, for instance, how, not Voice of Prophecy. It was, It Is Written was the first colorized Christian, television show, you know, like in the world or at least North America. Like, it was a big deal. So like, we were pioneers in a lot of those areas. And so now we're kind of transitioning to this idea, you know, where we all grew up with some of those things. And for Kevin, your experience was slightly different, but in the same way, like Anthony, we grew up, we have burned in memories of 3ABN, Hope Channel, Doug Batchelor with Amazing Facts. You know, those are parts of our childhood and upbringing. And, you know, those are still entities today. Those things are still around. Voice of Prophecy is still around today. But we've transitioned now, you know, in the 21st century where we're, you know, looking at social media, we're looking at internet and streaming and all these different things. And kind of the question that we're looking at is, you know, where is our church today? What are we doing? And Kevin, that's part of why we've asked you on, is because you have that experience and you maybe didn't expect it to go the way it did, where you have this level of influence on TikTok and Instagram, other places too, where you reach hundreds of thousands of people. You know, how do you feel about where we're at, you know, to just kind of jump ahead? When we look at today, do you feel like our church is still in that position where people know who we are? They see us around the world and know, like, you know, what we're about and how we reach people. What do you think about that?
Yeah, what a big question. A good question. What a big question. Yeah, you are right in saying that, like, I did not intend on any of this happening in my life. Mm-hmm. This whole thing about the chai stuff, the influence that you speak of. I'm deeply grateful for all the doors that have been opened. But it's given me kind of a small window into media, into how we talk about media, especially within the Adventist perspective, that I don't think a lot of people have. And I'm not saying that because they haven't tried different things, but I say that because, like, I feel like I'm, like, it feels so lonely from my perspective, because I feel like I'm, like, one of the very few people who are doing things the way that I'm doing. And what do I mean by that, right? So most of my audience, even to today, are non-Adventist. They're not Christian. People who are in the fringes, people who have, for whatever reason, have been, you know, they've been disenfranchised by the institution that is either Adventism or in particular, or American evangelicalism in general. So these are the people who tend to somehow congregate in this small little place on the internet. And I, to be honest with you, like, it's just so frustrating for me to see how, from the church's perspective, we are so zealous about answering questions that only a few people are asking. And while there's, like, a whole group of people, there's a whole demographic of individuals and groups who are not necessarily asking questions, but it just feels like they have to kind of figure things out on their own. So that's, like, I'm talking about the deconstructing community. I'm talking about the reconstructing community. I'm talking about millennials who grew up in the church who are just like, man, I don't know what I am anymore. I love Jesus, but, like, the church, I'm not sure about that. Like, there are so many people. I'm talking about South Asian Christians. I'm talking about POC Christians who are now having to deal with, like, okay, yeah, I still like Jesus, I still like Adventism, but, like, I don't see, they want my presence, but they don't want my perspective. You know, so these are the people. And so how are we talking to these people? You know, it's just, it feels like we, at least from an institutional standpoint, our only priority when it comes to communicating anything is to get them into a church and dunk them in the water. Like, I feel like, at least from my vantage point, and, like, I would love to be wrong, and, like, and every single communication is geared towards, you know, increasing membership, increasing tithe. Like, how can we talk about this in such a way to get them to to this thing that we want.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But that's not the point of that's not what communication is supposed to be. Communication is to primarily connect with people. Communication, the function of communication is to figure out ways to create space so that at least there's a space where all perspectives are at least heard and understood. But when you have an institution, the highest priority for an institution now becomes the perpetuation of that institution. So the moment where you have that as the priority, then now any type of communication you do is now geared towards that, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, and the moment where you make every single thing, every single communication from the institutional standpoint, the moment you make the motive of it like evangelistic, and by evangelistic I mean get them to the waters, dunk them, increase membership, then you are, I would say, having a narrow view of evangelism, right? And also you're cheapening communication itself. You're cheapening the function of media itself. So anyhow, we can keep going in this, man, but like I think in a nutshell, if you're not careful, we are going to continue to further our irrelevance in a constantly changing landscape, and we are also hastening our eventual obsolescence in this space.
Wow.
You just said a lot. He just said a lot.
And Anthony, before you go, I want to follow up because I think that was a great answer. It was good because I think that's a way that all of us at, you know, on our team, but also we've spoken to so many people that feel the same way. And it's interesting because this isn't just an Adventist problem. You see this in Christian media in general, and you speak a lot to the heart, a lot of times superficially. And we've had these conversations where a lot of times the reputation of Christian media, whether it's movies, TV shows, or other content, the expectation is it's poor quality. Like that's the reputation.
We just talked about Bible Man.
We just talked about Bible Man. But we could talk about PureFlix and God's Not Dead. And I just upset every Christian mom that thinks I think God's Not Dead is good. But seriously, like we see that reputation, but that's in its own way a superficial argument. Like, oh, it just looks, you know, dumb and not professional, and the actors aren't as good, the sets aren't as good, the story isn't as, you know, compelling, whatever it may be. But Kevin, you spoke at a deeper level just now, which is more just the principle of why are we doing this? What is it that we're trying to communicate? What's the goal of this? Who's our audience? And what's the heart that we're speaking to in the culture and time we're in today? Because that's the goal of what we're doing. And so that in its own way kind of solves that issue. Like we could talk, I almost want to talk about, you know, the quality issue in media, right? Like, how do we do this with excellence, right? We want people to see our church and see that we're doing things with excellence,
right?
In a way that, you know, opens their heart and mind to what message we might want to share with them. But you are talking about, before we talk about the quality of the cameras or the actors, we need to see in the first place, what is the mission? Like, what's the purpose? So if we're making a movie, we're making a show, or we're doing something online, why are we doing this? What are we trying to communicate? And is that abundantly clear and relevant to who we're trying to target content.
It almost seems like you're going beneath that almost to what is communication for?
Right.
Can you talk more about that?
I'm glad that you got that because a lot of people, you know, talking about the quality, talking about the aesthetics, that's like top, that's one layer, but you have to get deeper about motivations, why you're doing what you're doing. Let's talk about gospel, like communication specifically now from the perspective of a Christian institution. Like, why are we doing this? I think one thing that we have to kind of keep in mind is we are at a place where we have to distinguish between evangelism and proselytization. For far too often, I feel like we have conflated the two. What do we mean by that? Okay, proselytization is this idea of like, okay, you're stealing something, you're crafting an argument, you're crafting some rhetoric with the sole purpose of taking that person from wherever they are and expecting some worldview change so that they can now not only hear what you're trying to say, but they'll also subscribe to your worldview and mm-hmm. then carry on their life, the rest of their life, according to that worldview that they didn't have before, now that they do. That's proselytization. Right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, evangelism is not that. Evangelism could involve that, but evangelism, we have to have a broader perspective of evangelism is. Mm-hmm. Evangelism doesn't necessarily mean you have to now get this person from where they are and dunk them in the water and expect them to be Adventists for the rest of their life. Evangelism evangelism is a spectrum. We have to now, as an institution, we have to, I would say, accept the fact that there is a spectrum when it comes to evangelism. So mm-hmm. what's the spectrum? If you say zero, if you put zero as like, okay, I'm not doing anything. I'm just living my life. I'm not, mm-hmm. I don't care about anything else. The only thing what matters is my personal relationship with Jesus. It's vertical. That's it. Okay, that's zero. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then let's do 10 as baptism. Mm. Okay, a lot of people think that all forms of evangelism is going from zero to 10. Mm-hmm. No. Even if somebody says, oh, you know what? I'm listening to this guy who is making tea. But the guy, I find out, is a pastor. That's crazy. The last time I listened to a pastor was 10 years ago because I was abused. But this pastor, I can listen to.
Yeah.
Isn't that not evangelism? That you went from zero to maybe 0.1 or zero to one or two. That's evangelism. You
moved on the...
Right.
Yeah.
And so I think that when it comes to... when we think about how we communicate in a gospel-oriented way, we have to think about the gradients. We have to think about the shades. We have to think about the numbers in between the numbers. We can't just expect everything to go from zero to 10. And also to communicate for the sake of communicating, giving for the sake of giving, and period, end of story, just stop. What if we, instead of saying, okay, we're going to do this to reach people. That's the other thing. Mm. Like, why are you reaching people? People that whole concept again, like let me backtrack here a little bit. Like when you talk about reaching people for Jesus and you're tailoring your communication to that purpose, you're at the risk of now not necessarily bringing them to Jesus, but bringing them to like your understanding of what that looks like. Or you're at the risk of saying, okay, I'm going to bring them to this kind of institutional machine that we've created to house this kind of ideology.
Yeah.
And you have to understand that. So yeah, man, I think, those are the things that I want to mention for now. I think I'm thinking and talking at the same time, which I probably shouldn't. But those are some knee-jerk, half-brewed thoughts about that.
No, that's good.
That's good.
I mean, the question, and I mean, you kind of hit on a few of the questions that we had for you all in one. It's, you know, all these thoughts about like, what do you think the church gets right and wrong with its interaction with social media and media, and like, how does the church use media for evangelism? I mean, that's kind of what you're talking about. Like, but you're going a few layers of the cake deeper, right? To like, man, what is communication for? And I like it. I feel like that's challenging though. That's like what you're saying is really challenging.
Yeah.
Because I think, you know, maybe I'd always tend to be the devil's advocate so often, but I'm going to stay on brand.
Someone has to be, man. So,
right. I think, I guess maybe the pushback would be like, isn't like the heart behind evangelism is like, we've met Jesus and we want to share that with people, right? The Great Commission, like we're trying to do what Jesus said, go and teach and baptize them. And then, you know, Jesus said it, right? Wouldn't that be the pushback is like, Jesus said to go teach, tell them, baptize, do the whole thing. How do you interact with that?
Yeah. So, couple of things. I'm revisiting currently the Great Commission. And I'm wondering if the Great Commission was for a select few or was the Great Commission for all Christians at all times and all settings.
This is the hot take. Keep going.
Yeah. This is the clip, right? Let's go. I'm ready.
yeah.
I was not ready for this. I'm ready.
Say more.
Yeah. Because, you know, one could argue that the Great Commission, as it stands in Matthew, at the end of Matthew, mm-hmm. was for all people, regardless of where they're from, what they're doing, what they believe, what they look like, what their culture is. It's for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
That's one idea, which is what's the common, you know, mm-hmm. thing that's mm-hmm. done. Everybody has to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And we say, okay, yeah, but not everybody baptizes. No, not everybody can teach. But all of us are supposed to reach people for Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
But again, then we have a problem here. There's a challenge here. Mm. Who decides who's going to baptize? Who decides who's going to teach? The whole thing. Like, let's just take that whole thing. Like, who decides what people are going to do? Because not everybody's clearly baptizing everybody. Now, does this mean that now everybody can go and now just find, you know, Lake Michigan and be like, oh, you're Christian, let's just dunk you? No, that's not what it means. Somehow, when it comes to who's going to baptize mm-hmm. and who's going to teach, we've now relegated that to the institution. But now who made that decision? You know, was it the institution? Was it scripture? No. So we have to at some point admit that we've kind of added some things to what Jesus has said. And we also have to kind of agree, at least for me, like I'm at this point where I am willing to entertain the notion that maybe this was not just for everybody. Maybe this was just for a select few. Maybe it was just for the disciples during that time.
Mm.
But there is something, though, that's for all Christians. I think for all Christians, all at all times, regardless of where they're from. And that's found in, I believe, 2 Corinthians, where Paul talks about the ministry of reconciliation.
Yeah, it's good.
I feel like the command for us to be ministers of reconciliation from the Pauline perspective, I think, is more binding, I would say, and more universal than the Great Commission is.
Hmm.
Wow. Yeah.
And where Paul basically says, hey, you are now, because of what Jesus has done for us, mm-hmm. because of him reconciling the world to himself, you also are now ambassadors for Jesus, and now you are a minister of reconciliation. Now, because that thing now is a binding thing, because that was, people now recognized the early Christian church, they recognized that, and they say, you know what, we are reconcilers of humanity, because that's what Jesus has done for us, mm-hmm. and so that's what blew the church, like, from the early Christian church in such a way, because not everybody was baptizing everybody. The elders were probably doing it, but everybody was a minister of reconciliation. History tells us. How do I know this? Historically, when the pandemic happened in Rome, one of the historians, I'm not quite sure who the historian is, but he basically said that and I'm paraphrasing right now, even the Romans would not bury their own dead, and they mm-hmm. would leave the dead in the streets, because again, they didn't want to be contaminated. Yeah. But the Christians would step outside their houses and they would carry the Roman and would bury their Roman dead as well. But why? Because they thought that they were following this rabbi mm-hmm. who was Jesus, and they were Jesus followers. And so
the Black Plague, correct?
I think so. I think it's one of the, I think it might be the Black Plague. Yeah. Okay. So all this is to say, I'm going all off tangent here. But all this is to say, the purpose of Christian communication should always be to reconcile us to God, reconcile people to God, and build bridges and not build bunkers. Mm. The moment you bring in now proselytization, and the moment you now add this element of like, okay, we need to baptize them, sometimes you might not be reconciling people, because people might not be in that space. And in order for you to actually reconcile people, you have to pay attention to what they want, pay attention to their needs. You have to under prioritize your agenda and over prioritize their need. In order for you to be a reconciler.
Yeah.
And if you keep that as your focus of Christian communication, now you're getting somewhere, because now you don't have to now be you don't have the burden. You don't have the burden of being like, okay, I need to say this so that I can baptize mm-hmm. people. No, you say this because you're a reconciler. Now how mm-hmm. And that now is that's now contextual work, because different right. people have to be reconciled in different ways. Now we can now start to think more about like how can we have a constructive gospel communication strategy.
Wow. That's so interesting. I've never heard those two concepts separate. So you'd say that the gospel commission and reconciliation are separate concepts within the Bible of whether it's outreach or what we're called to do as Christians.
I think functionally, theologically, I think they're one and the same, but functionally they look different, man.
Okay.
Yeah. The Great Commission at its core is a ministry of reconciliation. So sure, I mean, theologically sure. they go together.
Yeah.
But functionally it might be different. Like not everybody is called to teach, not everybody is called to preach, not everybody is called to baptize. So who decides what? Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I would go one more thing to say. When we think about the gospel commission, I don't mm-hmm. think that we think about ministry of reconciliation. We think, okay, we need to baptize them and reach them for Jesus.
Yeah, true.
But ministry of reconciliation does not always mean baptism. Baptizing. Ministry of reconciliation doesn't always mean proselytization. Ministry of reconciliation doesn't always mean giving them a Bible study. It does not mean that. It means relational, messy work that unfortunately cannot be quantified, oftentimes can be anecdotal, and it doesn't look good on the books. Because you can't, it's tough, right?
It's not tangible victory, so to speak, right? Because we're looking, that's something we've all grown up with as like baptism is the end goal, right? Like mm-hmm. that's just, and it's never said, at least I'm not going to say anyone said that explicitly word for word, but that's been the general cultural expression of the expectation of the Adventist Church, you know, from local pastors to conference union GC leaders. That's the expectation. That's what we talk about. And so that's kind of a huge paradigm shift to think of as a Christian, as a Seventh-day Adventist, my goal is not to see someone necessarily be baptized into the church, but it's to help reconcile to God. And that doesn't necessarily express, at least when I'm with them, this specific step, or I guess we'd say 13 steps, to following God. And man, that's just so interesting, because we really struggle with, I'll just say I struggle with, because growing up in the church, that's always been my mindset of what a barometer of, you know, like this is what success looks like. This is how we know that we're doing the right thing. This is how we know we're spirit led, is you will see tangible results. And you're not even saying that we're not going to see tangible results. It's just may not be the results that we're thinking or expecting to see.
Yeah. Yeah.
So in your experience, what would be some examples for people, you know, wondering, or maybe you're a little nervous or uncomfortable with this concept? What are some realistic or practical things that you've seen in your life, or ideas, maybe you or someone else, for what this idea of reconciliation looks like?
Right. That's a great question. Let me preface what I'm going to say by this quote, Ellen White, Minister of Healing. I can't remember what the page number is. Mm-hmm. She says the strongest argument for the gospel is a loving and lovable Christian.
Yeah.
Period. Classic. Okay. Mm-hmm. And she might have said other things about what needs to be done to do that. But then that's a standalone sentence. It just like exists. It exists on its own. And that's a ministry of ministry of reconciliation language right there. She's like, no, it's who you are, like what type of person you are, the fruit of the spirit through you. You know, it's you. So what does that look like tangibly? Number one, I would say, how many non-Adventist friends do you have? How many people in your how many people are there in your circle of friends who are and good friends who don't believe anything like you do? How many? You know. What are the circles that you are a part of? Are you and not just part of, but how many circles are you actively contributing to that are not defined by religious or Adventist nomenclature? You know, so for me, that's the online space, that's the creative space. I'm friends with A lot of people are not Adventist, you know. Mm-hmm. And again, it's not something that I actively like said, like, okay, I want to be in places where it's not Adventist majority. But it just so happened where it's just, I because of the work that I do and the things that I talk about, there was resonance. And there's people like, oh, you know what? That's cool. And I benefit from a lot of their conversations as well. So those are some barometers that you can think of personally, like how many non-Adventist friends you have and how many circles that you're actually actively contributing to that are non-Adventist, non-Christian. Because when you talk about Ministry of Reconciliation, you have to assume that when you do that type of work, you are seen as someone who's worth talking to, someone who's worth hanging out with, by people who don't really care about what you believe. And so those two things are important. I'm trying to think of other things. I think also, why are you doing the work that you're doing? Like, why are you doing your creative work? And at the end of the, and if you keep asking the bunch of whys, if your ultimate why is, if your ultimate why is like, okay, I'm doing this to reach others for Jesus, I would love for you to revisit that. Like, why? Again, what's the point? A lot of people stop at that. I'm going to reach other people for Jesus. But again, why? Why do you want to do that? Keep asking why, keep going down. And if the ultimate why, of you doing that is not at some level rooted in the flourishing of that person in front of you, man, you, I don't know, you might be at risk of actually doing it because somebody else told you to do it, or because this is what you've already always known.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, like even the gospel, it's like, at the end of the day, the reason why I'm a Christian, the reason why I'm Adventist, the reason why I'm doing what I'm doing is because I believe that it's the best life operating system for being human.
Yeah.
It's the greatest life operating system out there. It's the way of Jesus. I'm like, wow, it's amazing. And so and it's the best thing. It's the best kind of system that has all the raw material for me to be the best lover of myself and the best lover of the person in front of me, and also the best lover of the quote unquote other, because everybody has an other in their mind. So those are some of the things that I would encourage people to think through, and ask, and think through and keep asking those questions.
Yeah. That's good, man. Thinking about the ultimate why. I really like that. I feel like this kind of heads, you know, to the question, you know, you've recently kind of made a shift in your online content, and, you know, you had a rebrand, and kind of, you had released a blog post about it and stuff like that. You know, kind of away from evangelistic oriented, I think is the way you put it. I might be off, but sort of that, kind of this idea that we're talking about. Can you talk a little bit about kind of, I mean, we've been talking about it, but maybe just curious about, like, personally for you, what was your heart behind shifting away, being evangelistic in your approach?
I wrote like a whole piece on this,
right?
Because the people are just like, "Whoa, what's going on? Are you Christian anymore?" You know. Because for those of you who are wondering, if you're first time listening to this, I used to be, my previous brand was Cross Culture Christian, and the reason why I picked that one was because that was the brand that I had for pretty much from the time I was 12 years old. Because I was creating content under that moniker. The reason why I created that was because I'm a cross cultural person. I am what they call a third culture kid. I grew up in that basically means that you grew up in multiple countries and multiple spaces, and now you're currently living in a place that's not your birthplace. And so I said, okay, I'm a cross cultural human being, but I'm also Christian. So cross culture Christian, and so I had that for a long time, and the longest time. And so, but then recently I shifted. I said, I went from cross culture Christian to now cross culture Kev, And so I wanted people to give, but that came from because of a long kind of time of thinking and pondering. So there's a couple of reasons. Number one, it's for access. So I create content for two main reasons. I create because I want to curate like a public archive of my learning. And I also want to create, to kind of recreate aha moments for people. Like I want people to think, oh, you know what? I haven't thought about it that way, you know? And I find a lot of joy in kind of helping people rethink things that they've thought about, because that's how I've grown. And so creating as Cross-Culture Kev, I think allows me to speak on like a range of issues, including theology and spirituality, from a cross-cultural perspective that is rooted in who I am, rather than a cross-cultural perspective rooted in like one aspect of who I am, which is Christian, even if it's the most important aspect of who I am. And so the first reason is through access, because I wanted to make content for a lot more people. And I also want to talk about a lot more things than just Christianity and than just theology. Like I wanted to talk about South Asian culture. I wanted to talk about cricket. I want to talk about obviously chai, but I don't want to just talk about Jesus. I want everything to go through who I am in Christ. And so Cross-Culture Kev. And so that's the other thing. So that's the first reason. So and the second reason is that I came to a point where I realized that the word Christian has so much baggage, especially in American evangelical spaces. And I saw that like many sort of Christian spaces on the internet have become bunkers that aim to protect us from them, rather than bridges where us and them can dialogue together. And much of what passes off as Christian content and media seems to be like aimed at prioritizing conversion over connection. And they will prioritize on feeding on people's fears. And also many Christian spaces, I felt, have become echo chambers that transform Christians into super Christians, instead of being beacons of light and justice to a world that desperately needs them. And so because the term Christian had so much baggage, and I was just like, you know what? I don't want to be associated with those things. And there was a lot of people who were like, oh, you're Christian. So you are this and this and this and this and this. I was like, no, I am Christian. I believe in Jesus, and the way of Jesus informs my life. But I am that, but I'm not this. I am this, but I'm not that.
Right.
But I wanted to create as much access as possible so that I can actually become a minister of reconciliation in spaces where quote unquote Christian content creators cannot go or will not be able to go.
Yeah.
Like I'm currently in spaces where I'm doing so many different things as a Christian that somebody who's a quote unquote Christian influencer will not be able to go. Because that's all they talk about sometimes, or because that's become their whole identity. You know, that's become their whole personality. And some Christian content creators are so quote unquote Christian that they forget to be human. You know, it's just like becomes like this whole brand thing, and it becomes a whole brand and a whole idol. So that's one of the, those are the main reasons, man. Honestly, like basically access and accuracy. Yeah.
Have you received any pushback from that within the church when it comes to, you know, you talk about it being an advantage to reach more people and to, you know, avoid it. You wouldn't even bring it up. It can become an idol or become its own, you know, box. And I tend to agree with you, which is a really interesting trend I've noticed, not with just you, but I've noticed some other Christian content creators that have put that emphasis as well, to, you know, with that same spirit in mind. So have you received any pushback on that where people are like, oh, you're selling out, you're not fully for the gospel, or, you know, maybe they're not saying those strong words, but kind of that sense of like you're diluting the message of what, you know, our church is supposed to be about, and you have this big platform, why aren't you using it to really proudly say you're a Christian? And, you know, that label speaks volumes. Has that happened at all since you made that switch?
Oh yeah, 100%. It's happened. I got this DM from this one guy who's been following me for a long time, and this guy sent me this long message of just like essentially saying, "Yeah, mm-hmm. you're a sellout, and I've been following you for a while. Mm. You started off with Christian content, and you became this chai guy, and now you're making chai videos now, and you've forgotten about the gospel. We are living in the end times right now. We have to preach the pure gospel and the true gospel, and we need people like you. You have so much influence, and you have betrayed me." You know, it was like the language was so deep and personal, and so and so I actually had a conversation with him because I know him personally as well.
Okay,
and we got in a conversation. I had to explain a couple of things to him. I shared the thing that I wrote because the Substack that I wrote has like my entire heart into it. And then I also went a little further and just explained a little more to him. And then I realized, man, like, for some people, it just felt like they were, like it was like a breakup almost, you know?
It's wow.
Like, oh, this guy is like not one of us anymore.
Wow.
And there were other comments as well from people who are also friends with. It's like, yo, man, you know, it's okay. You know, I love you still, but you're making a big mistake and this and that. This is a chance for you to reframe Christian, you know, and reframe what it means to be Adventist. And you didn't do that. And so, yeah, I had to deal with all of that, man. But you know what's funny, bro? The reaction that I got to that letter that I put out was overwhelmingly from people who are Christian, who are just like, man, you said things that I've thought about for a long time, and I just couldn't say it. So thank you for even normalizing the space of like, yes, I am deeply Christian. Yes, I am still following the way of Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, also, and I will tell you this, like, I care about our church. Like, I care about our institution. I'm indebted to what Andrews has done for me, what the church has done for me, I am.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, because I love the church, because I love Jesus, I deserve the right to call it out when it's not acting according to the way of Jesus. You know, it's like what James Baldwin said, like when someone asked him, yo, why are you still keep going back to America? And he was in France and they asked him, he's like, yo, because they're going to kill you. You're going to get shot. Like you, that's, they don't even care about you. And he said the same thing. He's like, yo, I go back because I love America. And because I love her, I'm going to call her out, you know? And I'm not doing whatever I'm doing to just be this anarchist and like I'm calling people out like this revolutionary. No, I'm not. But I think if the choice was between picking this name and this brand that is overtly Christian, and or being a minister of reconciliation to whole groups of people who, because of whatever reason, they're traumatized by Christian, traumatized by theology, traumatized by the church, I'm going to pick that any day. 100% any day. You know, we have an entire book in the Bible that doesn't mention the word of God, the name God. It's still in the Bible. We have the chapter of the Bible written by somebody who doesn't even follow God. Nebuchadnezzar wrote what, Daniel 4 or something. So, you know, it's like it's so I've honestly like stopped fighting that battle. I know who I am. I know whose I am. I know Christ is leading this thing, and I have chosen to follow the calling of God into gaps and spaces where a lot of people haven't gone before. And I want to steward the momentum, steward God's grace in whatever ways possible, even if it's through a humble cup of chai.
Wow, man. Wow. That's beautiful. As you think about, maybe as we start to wind down here, as you think about like the future, as you said, you know, sort of like at the forefront, as we think about the future of like media and social media, you know, Apple just released their augmented reality, you know, glasses, right? You know, we have like new AI popping up every day, you know, that can write whole papers. I've never used ChatGPT for my seminary papers. Just want to put that out there for my professors who may be listening. as we think about the future, like we're kind of in a moment of innovation almost, it seems like, and the world is only going even more and more right towards using these types of mediums to communicate. When you think about, I guess when you think about these things, are you hopeful and cynical about these innovations just in general and as they relate to the church? Like, do you see them as an opportunity for us to connect with even more people in the way that you've talked about? Or do you, are you a little cynical about it?
I think I've become more cynical in general. I don't know, because I'm a millennial and like my patience is running out.
We're geared for cynicism.
Yeah. So I'm actively trying to, that's a lie. I was about to say I'm actively trying to resist that, but I'm not. But I probably should. I probably should, just in general. Am I hopeful?
And allow me to frame, because as Adventists, a lot of our eschatology is invested in sort of like a lot of people, they envision, I would say maybe more accurately, a lot of people envision our eschatology connecting with sort of this idea of connection, world connection. And as it, relates to the intersection of religion, government, these big tech companies. So I think as these innovations come up, I think a lot of people, and I've heard conversations and had conversations about, man, what is this? Is this the mark of the beast, over here? Or is this, what is this, a sign of the end? Like, how do you interact with those things? And are you cynical or?
Yeah. So I'm part hopeful, part not, part cautious, I would say, not necessarily cynical, but cautious. So hopeful in the sense that I think that these new innovations in communication and in media are going to inspire a whole group of people, and whole group of Adventists, followers of Jesus, I would say, who have already been contextualizing their craft in a way that makes sense to people outside of the faith. And so I think these can be good tools for them to use to further that important work of contextualization. Mm-hmm. So I'm hopeful in that sense. And if you look at just the history of communication, also just like in the last couple of decades, we live in this digital economy right now. And so this is going to be the new norm. We're going to always have something new come up. But what's consistent, what's been consistent, regardless of whatever innovation and media that's come up, is our universal need for connection, our universal need for longing and belonging.
Mm-hmm.
That's good news, man. That means that we all, regardless of what happens in the world, like we always are going to be in a space where we're going to need some connection. So I think the gospel, like I believe the gospel is uniquely positioned to kind of go beyond the conversation of like what's the best way to communicate the gospel, to like going even deeper and saying like, why do we even long in the first place? Why do we even crave connection?
Wow.
And so I'm hopeful in that sense. I think it's hopefully the rise of all of these technologies can push us back to or push us maybe forward to asking deeper questions.
Yeah.
But I'm also cautious. I'm also cautious because these mediums, these things, and I'm putting social media also into this place. Mm-hmm. They are not just they are run by people. They are run by groups of people who have vested interests, and I tell my youth all the time, like, yo, if you don't know why you're using social media is using you, like straight up. Like you, it's just, you're the product, you're not the user, you're the product. Mm. You're being acted upon. So these are all forms, all these things are forming you, because they capitalize on attention. And so and the more AI makes it easier for us to kind of connect, and also not really connect, but just like make touch points and give us give the illusion that just having touch points is connection. Mm-hmm. We have to be really careful, man. We have to be really careful moving forward in how we actually relate to people more and more. But the flip side of that, caution is, again, this is again an opportunity for us to again revisit, answer deeper questions of longing and belonging through the gospel, through what Jesus did, through the way of Jesus. So it's an opportunity for us to contextualize. So we have to go back. So the more we progress, the more we innovate as a society, I think there's more need for us to go back to ancient ways, the ancient way of Jesus. Wow. So I think we have to kind of do that. So as the world is progressing towards this side, to this one direction, as Christians, as gospel, we have to go back to go back to the basics. Let's go back to raw way of Jesus. How did he do things? How did he talk to people? What's the ministry of reconciliation look like? What's the Great Commission? Was it for us, for everybody? How did he even talk to people one on one, you know? Mm-hmm. How do you talk to people to groups and just go back to like that granular level? So I think that's where we might need to go moving forward.
Man,
that's good. Oh man,
Kevin, we could talk so much longer about, like, I almost want to do a whole, like, we could talk about evangelism, man, just the whole like mission of our church. And we have here, we've talked about, you know, the Great Commission and what Christians are supposed to be doing. And that's gotten on such a deep level, which going back to media, you know, it's such a simple topic, but really any tool that we use, right, we're trying to do this reconciliation work. We're trying to bring people to know who Jesus is. And so it's really powerful to hear the way that you've thought through this. And, you know, for what it's worth, the way that you've rebranded, it makes sense. It makes sense in the context of our culture today to do that in a way that that reaches people in a way they need to be heard and spoken to. And so that's just powerful. We need more people like you, Kevin. We pray that when we do this too, of course, that we reach people in a way. And I thank God, like, we've had people that have spoken to us about, you know, these conversations that we've had, that helps them think differently about what it means to be connected to God, whether they're Adventist or not. And I love seeing that. That's the beautiful part. We can both be cautious about the mess that the digital age has been, but also we've reached people that never would have been reached.
100%.
And you've done that too. And that's the fruit that we can just find joy in and peace in through our relationship with God. And it's such a good work, right? Like, it's so good to that God uses us for that. And it's just that privilege. But, you know, as we finish up, like, we wanted to plug your book that's coming out soon. Like, that's
man.
Fall, right? Like, that's coming out this year, right?
Yeah, the book is coming out this year.
Can you talk about how you wrote a whole book and then lost the manuscript, was destroyed? Like, what happened?
I didn't know this.
Tell the story. You don't have to tell the story if you don't. I was just feeling for you when that happened.
Spilled the chai on it. That's how he lost it, right?
No, it was a digital thing, right?
Yeah. Yeah, this was like the final round of revisions for my manuscript.
Oh, no.
And so
how many pages?
The book as it stands right now is about 260.
Oh, wow.
Or 240 or 250 or something like that, yeah. So yeah, a lot of pages. And so I had a hard deadline to give the publishers the absolute final revision of the book. And so that took a couple of days to do. And then I did not back it up. And so I was going to Australia. I was in Australia. I was in Melbourne for a speaking thing. And I had all my notes for speaking, all that stuff in the computer, but my laptop just decided to crash right before the trip. I mean, on the way, I was trying to charge it on the airport. It was not charging completely. And so I lost the whole thing. I lost the whole motherboard.
Wild.
So what I had, though, was my final, I had the whole manuscript somewhere else. It was in a Google Drive.
Oh, okay.
So I had the manuscript. I had it. But I lost all the revisions, you see? Still, like, I had to go through that again.
Yeah.
So, but fortunately, this was like round five of my final revision. So I still had like the first four rounds of it still there, but it was still a lot of work, man. So it was still like a day. I lost like 2-3 days of work.
Oh, man. Oh.
And so I had to pull a couple of all-nighters and just kind of get it done.
That's a lot.
So, yeah. So yeah, but by the grace of God, I was able to get it done. It's I don't know how, but you know, it pays to have a good supportive partner, spouse, who can,
amen,
who can, you know, do everything else while you focus on this. Yeah, so it's nice. Amazing.
But that's coming out. That's coming out this year, correct?
Yeah, the book is coming out November 14th. But nice. The pre-order links will be out soon. I would say in the next 3 weeks. I'm gonna have a cover reveal soon.
Ooh, okay. Do you have a title?
Yeah, the title's called "The Way of Chai: Reflections Ooh. For a Meaningful Life."
Ooh.
So essentially, it's very cool. It's 15 chapters, and it's kind of this. I would say, how do I put this? I call this the topography of meaning. So essentially, it's like Ooh. This map where you're going from one location on the map to another location of the map.
Yeah,
and I'm using a chai as kind of like a vehicle for storytelling. So essentially, every chapter I talk about a specific aspect of the chai making process and how that relates to living a meaningful life.
Mm.
So it reads like a devotional, but for the secular, with some gospel spice.
Wow. Nice. Okay.
So all that's right. So that's kind of how the whole thing reads. So, but there's stories from my life, from the South Asian culture, from tea culture. So I nerd out in a couple of places about tea and how we make it. But the end goal is that the last kind of aftertaste that I want people to have when they read the book is like, wow, that was like, that's like, my life is beautiful. Wow. And like, we live in such a beautiful world and we get to share this with other people. So that's what I want people to, I want to leave people with. And yeah. So I'm excited, man.
That's awesome. Nice, man. Kevin, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much,
It's been an honor. Like you spoke to such depth. Not that we didn't
really
expect
did.
That,
yeah.
but it's just amazing how this has happened multiple times too, where we want to talk about.
You said it as if we didn't expect him to.
That's why I had to clarify.
We just expected it to be shallow.
Just completely shallow, surface level.
Oh, man.
It was so
but
good.
It went places, you know, just talking about the depth of what it means to be a follower of Jesus. And and it's just so powerful. So I hope that people got something out of it today, just hearing from your story, and we're excited. We're excited to read the book, see where you're headed online, and we'll see what God has in store for all of us. So thank you again.
Yeah, man. Where can people connect with you?
Right. People can connect with me through it's my socials. So Cross Culture Kev on Instagram, TikTok. But our website is going to come up soon too, crossculturekev.com, thewayofchai.com. It's going to come up. So basically, Instagram or I'm on Threads now too.
Oh, he's on Threads.
Yeah, we're recording this at the dawn of Threads. It's an exciting time, right?
It's a dawn of Threads, man. Let's see
Let's see how long it plays
out. We'll find out.
But also, I want to also say, you know, thank you guys for creating this space. I think it's a needed space. There are not many spaces within our church, within our institution, where we get to talk honestly about ourselves and about the things that are important to us in a way to not necessarily break it down or demonize it or caricaturize it, but as a way to just say, you know what, we love Jesus, we care about this, and we also are deeply Adventist. Whatever that means for us, and there might be different ways of understanding what that means, but it's hard to create a space where you can still talk about these things without feeling like you're being cornered in a place. And so I didn't feel that agenda in this conversation, and also just throughout like our friendships together. And now I'm meeting you, Sean, and I've known Anthony for a while. So all this is to say, keep up the good work. We need more spaces like this. And also, if you're listening to this and you've come to this, to the end of this, and you're someone who's Adventist, and you are in that space of like, you know what, I'm not really sure what that means anymore. And I am, you know, I have so many things that I want to do, and I just deeply, like, I do care about Jesus, and I care about the way of Christ, and he deeply informs me. I just want to let you know that you're not alone. There's just a whole group of us out there who are trying to navigate this kind of crazy liminal space in this world. There's so many of us, and and you don't feel the need to label your experience, just steward that momentum, you know, steward the energy, steward the clarity, whatever clarity that you have. Yeah, but resist the urge to define, resist the urge to label yourself, and just steward that energy. And also in all things, as embrace this experiment that we are all in, experiment of trying to figure out what it means to be a minister of reconciliation, and do that to the best of your abilities, to the best of Christ in you. So that's what I will tell you as you move forward, as you keep trying to figure this thing out.
Well, once again, thank you guys so much for listening to another episode of Seeking What They Sought. If you want to keep up with us, we exist on all the social media platforms. Our main way of communicating is Instagram, but we're also on TikTok, we're on YouTube, we're even on Facebook. For you millennials and Gen X's out there, even the boomers, we haven't forgotten about you. So we're on Facebook, you can keep up with us there as well. And if you have comments on the episode that we just posted and the discussion that was just had, you have thoughts, maybe you disagree, you have maybe a hot take or two, feel free to send us a message through our DMs on any social media, or shoot us an email. We'd love to have conversations with you guys. I also want to issue a thank you to our producer, Eric Edstrom, for making us sound pretty. He always does such a good job, man. We used to make fun of him all the time in the early seasons. I've let him off the hook recently. I might bring him back. What do you guys think? Let me know if we should bring him back. But Eric, we thank you so much for making us sound good. Last and not least, I would like to thank our patrons for helping us keep the lights on, for supporting us financially. We really, really appreciate your generosity. So I think that is just about it. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Seeking What They Sought.